In our lesson last Sunday morning, I spoke about, at least in part, about hope. And that is one of the areas that we're going to focus on this year as a congregation. And the point was made in that lesson that ultimately our hope is built around Jesus or centered around Jesus. The foundation of our hope is based on the fact that not only did Jesus come to earth and live, but he lived in the right way and he died a certain death. And of course, he was raised from that death. And he did all of that in a way that produces hope in us. And that makes every aspect of Jesus's life important. His birth, his sinless life, the sacrificial death, and of course, again, the resurrection. And I made the point in that lesson that if any one of these does not exist, then of course we don't have hope. If Jesus wasn't born, there is no hope. If Jesus didn't live a sinless life, there is no hope. If Jesus died an ordinary death, well, that wouldn't work. He had to die a sacrificial death, and of course, he had to be resurrected from that death. And so as we think about Jesus, the foundation of our hope, everything centers around the fact that he was born, the fact that he lived the perfect life, he died the sacrificial death, and of course, he has been raised from that death. And so that's what our hope is focused on. That's what our hope is based on. And so as we begin a year that focuses on the aspect of who Jesus was, I think it's good to just kind of lay some foundation. In that particular sermon last week, we talked about the birth of Jesus. And we looked at the hope that's found in the birth of Christ. Of course, the next natural thing to be considering would be the life that Jesus lived. And there are a tremendous amount of facets of Jesus's life. And so we're not going to dare try to cover the whole life of Jesus in just one lesson. Some of the girls that were at the Godly Girls class this afternoon rode back to the building with me, and I jokingly told them that I was going to preach for an hour tonight, and y'all be glad to know that they almost booed me out of the car. They suggested as little as 10 minutes. I don't think we'll cover it in 10 minutes, but maybe a little bit more than that. But I thank the girls for their good feedback about my preaching. So we're going to talk about the life of Jesus. And again, what my intention to do is to just, from time to time, I'm going to choose different aspects of who Jesus was, what Jesus is. And we're going to talk about that. And from time to time, especially as we're going through the New Testament, when we're in those times where we're reading through the Gospels, maybe we'll focus a lot on who Jesus was. And maybe we'll take a particular instance or a teaching or situation and draw something from that. But nonetheless, what we want to do or what I want to do is just over time, just build up in our minds the complete picture of who Jesus was. And so we've talked about his birth. Now let's talk about who he was while he was here. When we think about Jesus, there's actually a lot to his life. There's a whole lot more than what I'm going to mention here briefly. But we think about Jesus. One thing about him that we need to be impressed with is that Jesus was a master teacher. If you open up the Gospel of Mark, he almost immediately starts talking about the ministry of Jesus. And he notes from the very beginning of Jesus' teaching that people were amazed at Jesus' teaching. Some translations say that they were utterly amazed because Jesus taught like none other had taught before. Jesus taught as one having authority. And so when we think about Jesus and who he was, one thing that impresses us is the fact that he was a master teacher. Another thing that's certainly impressive is that Jesus was completely perfect. Now, that was absolutely necessary for him to be the sacrifice that we needed him to be. But we need to be impressed with the fact that Jesus lived here and was absolutely perfect. And I think that's something that's kind of hard for us to grasp. At least for me, that aspect of Jesus is sometimes hard for me to wrap my mind around. You see, sometimes I find myself sinning rather easily. And by that, I mean that I don't have the intention to sin. I don't necessarily try to or want to. But maybe a thought creeps into my mind or words creep out of my mouth that shouldn't be there. And I found myself contrary to what God would want me to be. We can easily find ourselves sometimes sinning. And when we realize how easy it can be to sin, it makes Jesus's perfection all that more impressive. And it's not as if Jesus wasn't tempted. Jesus was God. We talked about that last week and the fact that his name was Emmanuel, which means God with us. Of course, that's kind of hard for us to imagine sometimes and maybe hard to comprehend that Jesus was God himself, but Jesus was also a man. But the Hebrew writer writes in a way that gives us no mistaking that Jesus was endured or had to endure the same temptations that we do. In Hebrews chapter 4 and verse 15, we do not have a high priest who cannot sympathize with our weakness, but one who has been tempted in all things as we are, yet without sin. So whatever problem we have in our mind, reconciling the fact that Jesus is God and Jesus is man, the Hebrew writer clears it up and says, don't mistake. Jesus was tempted in all ways such as we are, yet he was without sin. And so obviously that's impressive. Jesus was a healer. As we read through those gospel accounts, a lot of space is given to the fact that Jesus made the blind to see, that Jesus healed the lame. He even raised some from the dead. He cured leprosy. He cast out demons. And so Jesus was a compassionate man that took the time to pay attention to the physical needs of people. And of course, Jesus is also a Savior. And maybe out of all of these things, we think about this the most. We partake of the Lord's Supper every first day of the week. And it's hard to separate the Lord's Supper from the fact that Jesus was our Savior. And so maybe for that reason, we think about this aspect of Jesus maybe more so than some of the others. And all of these are worthy of being impressed by. But there's one other thing about Jesus that really needs to be impressive, and maybe more so than some of these things, is the fact that Jesus is a king. And he's not just a king, but Jesus is King of Kings. And I think it's possible that sometimes we may overlook that aspect of who Jesus was. And so for tonight, I want to take a few minutes and just focus on the fact that Jesus is a king. Last week, when we were talking about the foretelling of the birth of Jesus, we're talking about the coming of the Messiah, the Anointed One. I mentioned that was something that was very much anticipated by the Jews. What they were most eagerly anticipating in a Messiah was a king. But not just any king. They were anticipating a special king. If we were to take time to go and look at all of the Old Testament prophecies that told about the coming Messiah, more than not would actually include something about his kingship. And so we understand from all of those prophecies, what's been built up in the minds of the Jewish people is that an anointed one is coming, a chosen one is coming, and he's going to be a king, and he's going to be a special king, a king like they had not seen, or at least in some terms before. In Micah chapter 5 and verse 2, but as for you, Bethlehem Ephrathah, too little to be among the clans of Judah. From you one will go forth for me to be ruler in Israel. His goings forth are from long ago, from the days of eternity. And so here's a prophecy about Jesus and a king and being an eternal king. We looked at this passage last week, again, talking about the anticipation of a king coming into this world. 2 Samuel chapter 7, verse 12 and 13. This is Nathan talking to David. When your days are complete and you lie down with your fathers, I will raise up your descendant after you, who will come forth from you, and I will establish his kingdom. And he shall build a house for my name, and I will establish the throne of his kingdom forever. Now, I pointed this out last week. The most immediate fulfillment of this was Solomon, the son of David, who did reign on the throne and who did build a house for the name of God. But he didn't rule forever. In 2 Samuel chapter 7, these verses tell us that there would be a king that would rule forever. And there are a lot of other Old Testament prophecies that not only talk about the Messiah, but talk about the king to come. And so they were anticipating a special king. However, when Jesus came to this earth, he didn't really fit the expectations. He didn't fit the mold of a special king. Whatever it was that they had conjured up in their mind and built up in their mind, Jesus didn't meet that for the most part. I would imagine that they had something far different in their mind than what Jesus actually was. I would imagine they may have had something similar to Solomon in their mind. When you think about king and a king of kings, Solomon would probably most definitely at least come to mind to some. We're not going to turn there and read, but in 2 Chronicles chapter 9, you might remember that word about Solomon and his kingdom, his wealth, his wisdom, that had traveled all over the world. And it tells us that the Queen of Sheba came out of curiosity to Jerusalem. She came to see if everything that she had heard was true. And she was there. She was able to see the wealth. She was able to inquire of Solomon and ask him whatever she wanted to. I would imagine she tried to stump him or maybe ask some difficult questions. But it tells us in the text that essentially she was breathless. There was no doubt that Solomon was a king. He was a king's kind of king. He was the kind of king that had a wealth that's hard to fathom. He had wisdom that's unmatchable. He sat on an ivory throne covered in gold. And so when you looked at his kingdom and when you looked at him himself, what you saw was no doubt a king. And maybe that's what the Jewish people had in mind when they're reading all of this about a coming Messiah, an anointed one. Maybe they had something similar to that in mind. But when Jesus comes, that long-awaited, much-anticipated special king, they get something totally different. One thing mentioned last week about the birth of Christ, well, it was pretty low-key considering the fact that a king was being born into the world. There was no fanfare. There was no widespread media coverage. There were no large groups of people gathered around to celebrate the birth of the king. He was just born as lowly and as humble as you can be born. And none of that really changed throughout the life of Jesus. As far as we know, Jesus never acquired any wealth. He probably never even owned the house that he lived in. He never acquired a large amount of prophecy. The New Testament doesn't really ever show us him going very far from where he was originally from. See, think about Jesus. He's not really fitting the mold of the king. He's not wealthy. He's not in a prominent position. He didn't own a lot. He was just a carpenter that grew up in a small place. He was the son of a carpenter. He was from a place, Nazareth, where someone once said, "Can anything good come out of Nazareth?" And so as we see Jesus come into this world, there's nothing that would point to this man being a special king, and there's nothing in his life that would point to him physically being a special king. We think about Jesus sometimes being referred to as a sheep. And that doesn't really fit the description of a king, a docile, submissive animal. We think about Jesus and he's referred to as a shepherd. And that doesn't really fit the description of the king that we might have in our mind. We think about when Jesus was coming into Jerusalem. Sometimes in our Bibles that's called the triumphant entry. And among those that day saw Jesus riding into Jerusalem, and maybe they're under the assumption that he's riding in and he's coming into Jerusalem, he's going to set up his kingdom. And so if Jesus is coming, the coming king is now going to establish his kingdom. He's going to be riding in and he's going to be on this majestic steed that's impressive, and it's a donkey that's been borrowed. That just didn't fit the description of a king. He's riding into Jerusalem on an animal that he doesn't even own. And more so than that, it's one of the more unimpressive animals. And so Jesus doesn't really fit the physical description. He never sat on an earthly throne. Of course, there were some who tried to put him on an earthly throne. He had to fight that off. You remember in John chapter 6, after Jesus fed the 5,000, it said that they gathered around him and physically they tried to take Jesus so that they could make him king. Jesus had to escape their grasp. And you think about the apostles, those who walked closest with Jesus, they had their minds wrapped around this physical kingdom. They were asking at one point, James and John and their mother came to Jesus in Mark chapter 11, and they said, "Jesus, just give us what we're asking you." It almost sounds something like a child would say, that a child comes to his parents and says, "What I'm about to ask you, I want you to promise me you'll give to me." And that seems to be the way that these disciples, James and John, came to Jesus. "Please just do what I'm about to ask you to do." And what they asked Jesus was to give them a prominent position in the kingdom. Put me on the right and the other on the left. And so it's very evident that they had in their mind Jesus sitting on a throne and giving out positions of authority. Well, today we have an advantage. And I would say that advantage is that we live today, that we live in the last days. We have come to a time to where we can see the full picture. There's that passage in John chapter 18 in verse 36 where Jesus is there on trial. And Jesus answered, "My kingdom is not of this world. If my kingdom were of this world, then my servants would be fighting, so that I would not be handed over to the Jews. But as it is, my kingdom is not of this realm." Because you and I live today after, in hindsight of all of this, we can understand the words of Jesus. We understand that his kingdom is not of this world, that his kingdom is not of this realm. That became very evident after the resurrection and after the ascension of Jesus. Peter understood that in Acts chapter 2 when he talks about this Jesus in front of the Jewish audience, this Jesus whom you crucified. He says there that he was the descendant of David. He was the one that God had ordained to rule on the throne. He has been exalted to the right hand of God. Jesus is now ruling in heaven. Jesus had been made king. And those in that time eventually understood that. But that was not all understood at that time. But now, Peter understood. Others there then understood on the day of Pentecost. And you and I today understand these words of Jesus: "My kingdom is not of this world." And I would say, with the exception of a few in the religious world, we all comprehend that pretty well. That Jesus did establish a kingdom, and Jesus is currently reigning as king. And that fact really ought to produce a lot of hope in us, the fact that Jesus is reigning as king. You see, a king is one who has ultimate authority. And that's a little bit of a foreign idea to us, because the country which we live in doesn't have a king. We don't have a system of government like that. Our government is set up so that all the power doesn't lie within one person or even lie within one group. We have different branches with different purposes and different authorities. And that ensures that not one single person or one small group of people take over and just do the things that they want to do. But when we're thinking about a kingship, there are no different branches. There isn't this idea of authority being some here and some here and some here. The idea is that a king has ultimate authority. A king has all the power, and he doesn't have to share that power with others. And if we're thinking about a kingdom of men, well, that's kind of a scary thought, because men are not very trustworthy. Men are fallible. The men who hold positions on earth cannot always be trusted to do what's right. They can't always be trusted to rule in the best interest of the people they rule over. Sometimes kings of men are ruled by greed. They lord their authority over those which they rule over. They make an abuse of the position that they hold. And so when we're thinking about a king, the first thing may not be a good thought, because we know what kings made of men can do. They can become a terror. They can become a threat. They can just do whatever they want to do, and they don't really have to be right in doing it. And that's a scary thought. And for that reason alone, we may have a hard time trusting in kings among men. There's a lot of anxiety that comes with the rule of a king. And not just a king, but even in our country, we don't elect a king, but we elect those who rule over us. And there's anxiety with that. When we're electing a president, you realize we're only electing someone for 4 years. And in the grand scheme of things, 4 years is not really that long, but 4 years is enough to produce some anxiety, especially if we don't really have confidence in the way that they're ruling. And of course, when there's a king, that situation can be a little bit worse, because in some governments today, they resemble the governments that we read about in the Old Testament, in the times of kings and judges, where you may have a king that sits on the throne for 30 or 40 or even 50 years. Well, that's a long time to be under the rule of a bad king. And his descendants are going to be the ones who take that throne. And there's anxiety that comes with that. You may have a bad king, and the fear of the people is that the son's going to be just as bad, or maybe even worse than the father. Or maybe the father's a good king and the sons are not. And so there's all kinds of anxiety that goes along with a king on this earth. That's just the way the kingdoms of men go. But Jesus is not the kind of king that brings anxiety to men. You see, Jesus is a perfect king. And there's no reason to fear how long Jesus is going to rule. There's no reason to question, is this king going to rule in a way that's best for his people? We don't have to fear a successor coming along that's not as good as the one he succeeds. Because there will be no successor to Jesus. As we've talked about or read in the Old Testament, as what's affirmed in the New Testament, Jesus will rule as king forever. Jesus is not the kind of king that can be influenced by his peers. Jesus is not the kind of king that's going to be ruled by greed or love the fact that he has authority over others. You see, our hope is founded on the fact that Jesus is a perfect king. If we are subject to his authority. You see, all of this hope that we want to put in Jesus as the perfect king has to come by way of submitting to the king. And that means that we're going to have to recognize his authority, and that means that we're going to have to be obedient to his authority. The fact that Jesus' kingship is not like the other kingdoms of men doesn't at all diminish the fact that he is king, that he is ruler, he reigns, and it doesn't diminish his authority. We are subject to his rule, just like every other king. Jesus, as king, has a law. And each one of us have to decide, are we going to submit to that law? Are we going to submit to the king or not? I've mentioned several differences between earthly kings and Jesus as king. But I would say one of the biggest differences between an earthly king and Jesus, the eternal king, is that earthly kings can force us to submit to their rule. They can bind on us whatever they want to bind, and they can make us do whatever they want us to do. They can force us to submit. But Jesus doesn't do that. We have the choice of letting the King of Kings rule in our life or just simply going some other way. The Bible teaches, though, those of us who will submit to the king will be eternally blessed. And of course, those who choose not to submit to the king will ultimately be punished. And it's the life that we live that shows if we're submitting to the King of Kings or if we're just submitting to something else. You see, if we choose Jesus as our hope, that means we're choosing Jesus as our king. And that means we're going to submit to his ways, and that means that the way we walk is going to be a little bit different. As a matter of fact, it's going to be a lot different than the rest of the world. If your hope is in Jesus Christ, you'll talk differently than the rest of the world. As I mentioned this morning, you'll expose yourself to completely different things if Jesus is truly your king. If Jesus is your king, then you'll react completely differently to almost everything in life. If Jesus is our king, our purpose in life will be different. I mentioned in the very beginning that many in the world don't understand why we would be here tonight doing what we're doing. But we're here tonight because we serve the King of Kings. And we're going to submit to his rule, and we're going to submit to his authority, and we're going to live our life the way that he wants us to until he returns again. And he calls us up to meet him in the sky. There's hope in that message. And I hope we appreciate the hope in the fact that Jesus is the perfect king. The decision, though, to serve the king, as I mentioned, is ours. You and I get to decide if we're going to submit to the king or not. And so the question I pose to you as we close is, do you want to live life with the hope of heaven? And if you do, you need to submit to the king. You need to change your ways to fit his ways. Jesus may not have fit the typical mold of an earthly king. He came in a lowly way and he left in a really low way. And everything in between was pretty low and it was pretty humble. It was very untypical of a king. But Jesus was not just a key. Jesus is the key. And he's a king that's willing to save your soul if you'll submit to him. Is there somebody here tonight who's ready to submit to the king, to make his ways their ways, and allow yourself to be in his kingdom? If we can help you tonight, if we can help you tonight start living with the hope of heaven by submitting to the king, let us know how we can do that while we stand and sing.